We've reached the final four in the Champions League, and remarkably, there are no Premier League clubs at the big dance. Real Madrid dumped out the champions Manchester City and now face a Bayern Munich side that edged out Arsenal. PSG moving ever closer to their holy grail, but Borussia Dortmund stand in their way, and they may have learned a thing or two from facing Paris in the group stage. There are thrills, spills, twists, and turns to come. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football. Ball only better. We've got a top tipping team in today, starting with the data doctor himself, Jake Oscarthorpe. Jake, let's start with Tuesday's clash between Bayern and Real Madrid. Bayern's home win against Arsenal in the Champions League in the quarterfinals, probably their best performance of the season, actually. Certainly their most solid, I think, but probably no Sané, Coman, Gnabry, all out. So injuries have taken their toll on their attacking unit.
Big time, yeah. And I think the other side of this, Real Madrid have actually got a near full fit squad. I know they're missing Carvajal through suspension, but Militao got minutes at the weekend. He could well start here. And yeah, this looks a very, very difficult task for Bayern Munich, not only because of the injuries, but just because of the tactical variety that Madrid can bring to the game, whether that be from the start or off the bench. And the fact that this is just Madrid's competition, isn't it? Let's be honest. Like they just find a way. They sometimes play shit, sometimes play good. They still get through. It doesn't really matter. They
You with your
defy.
technical analytical
Yeah,
terms,
yeah, yeah.
honestly, these XG guys.
I'm trying to think who that manager was who with the famous quote of sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. Yeah, it doesn't matter for Madrid whether they're good or shit. They will find a way to advance. And they do defy the data at some points. But as we've discussed in previous seasons, when it comes to knockout competitions, data to some extent can go out the window because it is just the
You're trying to
idea
get
of
yourself
XG data.
sacked.
Not trying, no. But the idea of XG data is it's a longer term
Yeah, sure.
predictive tool, and when you can get some aberrations where a team loses the XG battle 3-1, but still manages to win the game. And we kind of saw that at the Etihad, where Man City just peppered Madrid. They hung in there, managed to get through on penalties. So that has to be taken with a pinch of salt. But they just don't know how to lose this Real Madrid team. They're unbeaten in 41 matches across all competitions in 90 minutes. Like I said, the squad's unbelievably deep. Well rested at the weekend as well. Managed to rotate and still go away and beat Sociedad. So I'm looking at Real Madrid to win, draw no bet on the Asian handicap at 2.13, and I'm thinking that's a play.
Big bad boys, he's in the house. Alex Boyes from betting.betfair.com. Relieved that he has no reason to talk about his beloved Leeds United. You don't have to, Boyes. It's fine. You don't have to. Unless you want therapy, we don't have to talk about what happened at the weekend when they lost 4-0 to QPR. Just for completists there who were
You have to
wondering
read the score
what
as
it
well.
was we were actually talking about was 4-0, just so we know. Talking of elite football, of course, Real Madrid, as Jake says, they have this incredible knack of even when they're not playing particularly well, they find a way to drag results out. El Clasico was a great example of that, didn't play particularly well and found a way to come back and win the game. And it's difficult to kind of price that up and quantify it, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's the thing. Jake's kind of already alluded to it there, but sometimes you can't just like the way this love affair goes with Real Madrid in the Champions League doesn't really come into the pricing necessarily because that's worked off all the data and the market and what people where the money's going. So it's always really exciting, I think, when they're in the Champions League from a betting point of view because, especially in away games in knockout football, you just get some juicy prices on Real Madrid where you usually wouldn't because they're sort of outliers with the data. So Jake's mentioned his bet there. I mean, I just like them on their own on the exchange, 2.92 to win the game. I mean, you've highlighted some of the injuries that Bayern Munich have got there. So already, I mean, I didn't actually know the full sort of list Bayern were dealing with. So that excites me even more. Like you say, you just not really quantified the fact that they just have this knack of getting through in the competition. I know Bayern are in decent form. Let's highlight the, was it 4 wins in a row, 4 wins in 5?
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, I know what you mean. Like, obviously, you look at that and you think Bayern are in good nick, but all that stuff. I kind of feel like, and it does seem really weird, this, right? But I kind of feel with them, the Bundesliga stuff is almost irrelevant in the sense that obviously it's good that Kane's scoring goals, they've got rhythm, all that stuff. I get that. But their performance against Arsenal in the quarterfinals, especially the home leg, was so out of keeping with anything they've done in the Bundesliga this season. It was so removed from that, because I've seen mid teams play through them. I've seen really poor teams make chances against them. Whereas against Arsenal, it was a totally different scenario. So that's the only flag I would wave for Bayern. I think you guys are right. I think Real Madrid look value to a certain extent. But Musiala should be back. Müller's always a danger. Müller's created tons of chances this season. He's still really high on kind of all the creative metrics, even though maybe his goals and assists aren't as high as they usually would be. Matthijs Tel, I think, is a wild card, can do stuff. And then you've got Kane, who's scoring goals left, right and centre. So I wouldn't write Bayern off, but I understand why Real Madrid are being favoured here.
Yeah, and also there's even the added layer now with Bayern, with the another fallout with Tuchel and the hierarchy about, you know,
that
Tuchel's
happens
been
every
questioned.
Week.
Yeah, I know, but this one seems personal, this one, didn't it? It really sort of amped up a bit. So whether that's really gonna take part, I mean, it probably just spurs Tuchel on to really go out on the high if he can, if anything, but... Yeah, you mentioned that, Kev. I mean, look, it's 3 clean sheets in 17 in all comps for Bayern 2. They somehow managed to restrict that Arsenal team to 8 shots in the second leg, despite going ahead with, what, over half an hour left? So the games they're involved in that, it's really impressive, that performance. But then you've got Real Madrid, who've only failed to score once in all competitions this season, and they've scored in every single away game. You know, 4 wins in a draw in their 5 away Champions League games, so... They've had plenty of famous sort of away wins in the knockout stages over the last few, well, over the whole competition, but even more so the last few years. So, yeah, sort of price up at 2.9 on the exchange. I don't think you can ignore that. Looking at some of the player prop markets, Kev, just quickly, I've got 2 players to mention here. It's Harry Kane and his fouls. So these prices have come in from previous Champions League matches. We were sort of constantly getting even money, maybe even 11 to 10, for him to commit a foul. Now, he's 11 to 8 here to commit one, which I still think is a fine price, especially those for looking to add legs to their bet builders. You know, his average fouls per 90 in the Bundesliga is 0.3, but it increases to 1.2 in the Champions League for whatever reason. You know, he's committed three fouls in 3 different Champions League matches this season, and he's only failed to commit one in one of the of Bayern's home matches in the competition. But perhaps it's just sort of different way the referees come at these ties.
Yeah,
So he's, because his overall foul count is so low, so like it's really nice we can get some much bigger prices than we usually would because of his overall sort of foul numbers. So I mean, I was on the Kane to commit 3 plus fouls at the Emirates, which was 25 to 1 in that first leg against Arsenal. He committed 3 that night. He was fouled 6 times and was booked. So there was probably some North London derby stuff in there, of course, but the prices have come in a bit because it's 14 to 1 that he commits 3 in this game. But I still think the 8 to 11 for 1 and 7 to 2 for 2 are worth a go. And finally, you mentioned, I think Jake mentioned, Carvajal is suspended. Now, I don't know what they'll do. They might go Militao, they might go Lucas Vasquez. You know, Lucas Vasquez started at right back in El Clasico.
He was brilliant. He was really good in El Clasico,
He was, and he was fouled 4 times. I think 3 might have even been in the first half. He also came out the weekend for a solitary 9 minutes and was fouled as well. And I did some digging into sort of his fouls won numbers over the season, and it sort of comes out that he averages 1.8 fouls won per 90 in all competitions this season. He's 9-5 to win 2 fouls here and 6-1 to win 3. And if he starts, I'm going to look at both of those as well.
Oz compiler and tipster Mark Stinchcombe is with us once again. Stinch, let's move to Wednesday's semi-final. Borussia Dortmund taking on PSG. Paris drew in Germany, played pretty well in that game, actually. Beat Dortmund in the French capital at the group stage. So if you were looking just at those two games, you'd think Paris are a level above. If you were only looking at those games, I think. Both teams looked pretty distracted at the weekend. I thought Dortmund were awful in the second half against RB Leipzig at the weekend. And yet, in this competition, they do seem to have played some of their best stuff. It's quite a weird mix between the two competitions.
Yeah, I just wanted to start with the sort of what we might expect in terms of how open these semi-finals perhaps will be based on what we've seen since the away goals was removed in the competition at semi-final stage. So we haven't got that many games to go off, but just to give a brief overview of what we've seen so far. So across obviously Champions League, Europa League, and Europa Conference League, we've had 12 different matches in semi-finals since the away goals rule was removed. And there's been 33 goals, so there's an average there of 2.75 per game, which basically is pretty much, if you convert that into odds, that's pretty much 50-50 over under 2.5 goals. So it doesn't really tell us much there. So my basically what we spoke about in the earlier rounds was you perhaps might want to favour unders based on what we'd seen so far, which worked quite well in the first knockout stage. But then in the quarterfinals, I think that all went out the window. Thankfully, I wasn't on that week. yeah, I think it just goes to show actually what you need to do is take each game on its individual merit rather than trying to paint a picture of what we've seen on limited data so far. So I think this is what sort of excites me about this game, because the goal expectancy for this game is enormous. It's 3.3 goals. So that means that over 2.5 goals is 2-5. Well, if anybody's seen Dortmund under Terzic in the Champions League, I don't think it's going to be an open game. I think it's worth quickly touching on the prices for the outright winner: Madrid 2.58, PSG 3.7, Bayern 3.95, and then way back Dortmund at 10.5. I mean, Jake's spoken about it already before. If you've got this far, and also obviously Dortmund don't play in the way under Terzic, in my opinion, in these big games that lends itself to winning these big ties, but clearly it's worked to some extent to get to this stage. There is an argument to say perhaps Dortmund are worth backing, not because of not because you'd expect to win more often than the price suggests because of the style of play, but just because of the nuance of defensive football can maybe get you to a final at from 2 games away, obviously. And then anything can happen, basically. And that's not something that me personally, I would want to back. But I think it's something interesting that, you know, if Mourinho was in charge of Dortmund, for example, it might be a bet because we know previous to probably what 2018 onwards, you know, he was getting results playing this style of football in the competition. But yeah, having said all of that, I think, yeah, a low scoring tie is on the card. So I really like the look of under goals, and because of the narrative of it's being expected to be a high scoring game, you can get under 3.25 goals is like the most competitive line. You can get around about 1.87, and like if PSG go away with a 2-1 victory, which I don't think anyone would be surprised at, for example, you're still half your bet's still going to win. So the only way the bet would lose completely is if there's four or more goals, and I just don't foresee a real open end-to-end game based on everything we know. I mean, they've faced each other 4 times since 2020, and it's finished 1-1, 2-0, 2-0, and 2-1. Dortmund with one victory there, PSG with two. You know, you can see there all of them have gone under 4 goals, and if you look at Terzic in Europe, 12 of his last 15 have gone under 2.5 goals at an average of 2.07 per game. And, you know, we've got a goal expectancy here of 3.3. So really, really easy bet for me based on everything we know and how I foresee the game to play out. I mean, if you look at the two matches this season, Dortmund had 45% possession in the home game. They didn't need to win that game because they'd already qualified, and 35% possession in the away game. I think the away game was a real clear, obvious of how the game is going to pan out. For about an hour, Dortmund didn't do anything until they were
No, they tried
behind.
to lock it up, right? And then they got done with the penalty, which was an outrage. That handball was a stupid penalty decision. And that obviously ruined their game plan. But the idea was to hit on the counter with pace, right? But they just didn't manage to find their strikers. But that was the game plan. It was ruined by a refereeing decision ultimately.
Yeah, and I don't see any reason why, oh, we've got to semi-finals, we're going to rip it all up and change how we play. That I don't think that's going to happen. And as I say, 45% and 35% possession in the two games this season. You look at them in the Bundesliga, they average 57%. So there's a clear change in style of play compared to how they would play this in the Bundesliga. So I think there's so much positive EV here in the price at being able to take under 3.25. I would probably still be happy to back under 2.75 goals, for example. So I think there's a lot of juice here.
Yeah, Jake, it's an interesting one, really, with Dortmund because we saw that chaotic game against Atletico Madrid. We saw the attacking quality they do have. But I commentated on their game at Leipzig at the weekend. They were dreadful, especially in midfield. They were completely overrun. So you never quite know what you're going to get with Dortmund. But they have, as Stinch says, in this competition, they managed to beat Newcastle home and away. They managed to win in Newcastle 1-0 and have a very good defensive display. So they are capable of it, but you can never quite know what they're going to produce.
No, exactly. I think I would personally be taking that result the weekend with a pinch of salt because, I mean, it looks almost nailed on now that Germany are going to get the fifth Champions League spot and Dortmund are sat in fifth, comfortably
They were
clear.
trying though, and they were just like shredded by Leipzig. I mean, they absolutely ran them over.
Leipzig, funny team, Leipzig. They're another one that a good side that probably should have beaten Real Madrid in this competition. So again, it's a tough opponent. I understand where Sinch is coming from in terms of the low goal angle. I definitely think that Dortmund's setup could lean that way. But my only nagging doubt about it is the fact that, similar to the Atletico Madrid tie in the last round, like both Dortmund and PSG don't travel particularly well. I know PSG's record away from home in the league is really good, but they actually conceded the sixth most expected goals in Ligue 1 when traveling this season, which kind of highlights their real defensive frailties. And Dortmund generally don't travel well at all. So I think the home legs are going to be crucial, which means that Dortmund might have to have a go at some point. I don't think a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw is going to be a good enough result for Dortmund because I think they'll just get slapped in France. So that'd be my only nagging doubt about taking the unders, but I do agree with Stinch that there is value in the unders line because it is too high at the moment. But for me, I just looked at the prices on the exchange, and currently you're getting even money. You might be able to get matched at a little bit more than that for Kylian Mbappe to score any time. It seems a pretty obvious bet, but I mean, at that price, it's just an automatic play. I mean, the bloke scored 41 goals in 43 games this season. Absolutely ridiculous record. He's averaged 0.9 expected goals per 90 across all competitions this season. So that's Coupe de France, Ligue 1, and the Champions League. It's just daft, really. It's kind of Messi-esque numbers, Ronaldo-esque numbers from yesteryear. Like Stinch highlighted the fact that PSG were by far the better team generally in both of those games against Dortmund in the group stage in terms of chance creation. Obviously, not too much defensively, but
Well,
they.
Mbappe caused them all kinds of problems in Germany in the group stage. I mean, if Zula hadn't produced that amazing goal line clearance, he would have scored. He had other good positions as well. So, I mean, evens for him to score at any time seems a great bet.
And like I said, PSG, they caused so many problems. It's 2.4 XG they created in Paris and 2.86 in Germany. And granted, we've established that Dortmund didn't need to get a win in that second game. A draw was enough for them, so that kind of affected the game state. But it just shows you that PSG have the capabilities to cause Dortmund serious problems. And I was quite sweet on PSG at the start of the season for this competition because I felt that their squad was. Now they've got rid of a couple of the bigger named kind of problem makers, troublemakers, if you like, Neymar, and I guess Messi wasn't really a troublemaker, but he was not really conducive to that team aspect
Well, it's the
of
balance,
football.
right? I mean, you can have Messi, you
Exactly.
can have
More
Neymar, you
balance,
can have
yeah.
all these stars, but if you basically play 8 and 3 instead of a team without the ball, you're going to get smacked by good teams, aren't
Exactly.
you? So it's not a Messi problem per se, but it's that type of star that they're needed to actually get rid of.
Exactly. And I think that they had the balance in the squad just going into the season. My big question was just could Luis Enrique get a tune out of them? And I think that I thought they would get better as the season progressed. I can't tell you if they have got better since the season's progressed because they like Dortmund, carry on throwing some really weird performances in. But I do think that they are in a position now where things are looking very good and they've got a really good chance in this competition. And Mbappe. he obviously would love to win the Champions League with PSG. And you can just imagine PSG getting to the Champions League final, playing potentially Madrid. The team's going to join. I mean, the storyline's there. I know it's probably in the back of his mind right now, but if Mbappe was to win the Champions League with PSG and then go on and win the Euros with France, he's a lock for the Ballon d'Or, which is probably something that he wants as a personal accolade. I'm not saying that that's in his mind in this game, but I think his price to score when he's anywhere near even money right now, you just back it. You just back it. And I did have a look in the other game in Bayern Madrid. Payne was around 2.1, and compare those two prices and the potential I see of both teams getting on the score sheet. And I think Mbappe is by far the better bet.
Yeah, Boise, how do you see this one? Because Dortmund have actually probably been better away from home at times in than at home in the Bundesliga, but in the Champions League, not necessarily the case.
Yeah, I'm the sort of thing I'm hoping for, which is probably opposite to Stinch, is goals. I want goals, and I'm hoping the sort of first legs in the quarterfinals sort of pave the way for these four teams to really go at it in these first legs. You know, Dortmund lost 2-1 in Spain, PSG lost 3-2, Real drew 3-3, and Bayern drew 2-2, didn't they? So I'm hoping we sort of get a similar sort of line with these first legs. And the thing that I wanted to highlight from those sort of ties between PSG and Dortmund in the group stages, Jake's mentioned PSG's sort of expected goals numbers across the game, across the two games. They had 35 shots across the two games in PSG, and 70% of those came from inside Dortmund's box. So despite having that sort of Dortmund's plan, you could say it worked to an extent, and you know there weren't all great high quality chances, but I think that's still a high number for overall for those to come inside Dortmund's area. They had 15 corners as well, dominating that territory. So I again, a bit like the Real Madrid game, I thought their sort of 6-4 price on the exchange was quite tempting just to win the game. PSG. The thing with Dortmund is they actually have the highest overall expected goals conceded in the whole competition. Now, that averages out to 1.8 per game, obviously, because plenty of teams have played fewer games than them. They've played the joint most, obviously, hence been in the semis. But yeah, their 1.8 expected goals against per game caught my eye, coupled with PSG's 2.04 expected goals. So I didn't want to just ignore the obvious here. And the one thing to point out about Dortmund is their actual number of goals conceded from that 18 is 8. So, shout out to Gregor Kobel. Is that how you pronounce his
Oh,
name, Kev?
Kobel, he's the best goalkeeper in the Bundesliga by
Yeah,
miles. Yeah, absolutely.
he's made more saves than any other keeper in the competition. And you know that's a big differential from what would to be expected is 8. So that really doesn't put me off PSG's chances and their chances for goals. You know, Jake's mentioned Mbappe. I was gonna, I say tip up Mbappe scoring. You feel a bit like a fraud, don't you, Jake, when you sort of put someone like that up? But I'm with you. I didn't mind his price at 5-6 on the sports book for any bet builders either. I remember doing this show when they went to Real Sociedad in the was it the, it was the last 16, wasn't it? Sociedad,
Yeah,
I
last
think.
16. Yeah, that's right.
And PSG was priced a little bit similar to where here, and you could get Mbappe at over evens to score, and I just had to put it up, and he did score. He's gone twice in the first 20, I think. The guy's record for that sort of price, I think I'm with Jake. You have to go. I mean, PSG to win and Mbappe to score, which usually go hand in hand, that's 2-1. I just think that's really tempting already, to be completely honest. But it's not just about sort of PSG scoring. I mentioned at the top there about hoping for goals in these first legs in general. I know some of these games you have to take them with a pinch of salt because they've been played around difficult knockout games for both teams, but in the last few, PSG have seen 27 goals across their last 7 in all comps. Both sides have scored in every single game in that run. Dortmund have seen 19 in their last 5. Both sides have scored in each of those. So we're looking at just under 4 goals a game over that sample size between the two sides in recent weeks. So I was looking at the over goal lines, and I liked the 11 to 8 on over 3.5 goals on the Betfair exchange. And I've just mentioned the Mbappe and PSG to win. If you throw in PSG to win, Mbappe to score over 3.5, and both teams to score, which again, it's, when you start adding legs, it sounds like that's a lot. But then I start thinking of one by one, thinking, well, I like them all. Yeah,
it's
put
all the
together.
same theme, though, isn't it? I
Exactly.
guess.
And I just think you can start boosting it up to 5-1. And I think, oh, that's a bit amazing, is that, Kev? By the way, one thing that I also wanted to mention, just aside from that, is Marcel Sabitzer, right? So I actually was going to ask quiz who has the most assists in the Champions League, but I've just told you the answer. It's Marcel Sabitzer,
Yes.
which just
Thank you for
surprised
that.
me.
It's
Sorry,
not
I was
really
going
how
to.
quizzes work, but
No,
carry
I've come the wrong
on.
way. Here's the answer. What's the question? I should have said
Yeah.
that, shouldn't I?
It's like Jeopardy. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
sorry. But did everyone know this? I was like, oh, Sabitzer at the top five. That's surprising. So I thought, let's dig into his numbers. He's only created 12 chances in the Champions League. He's got five assists. It's pretty remarkable, the sort of output there. He's got nine assists in all competitions this season, which is most in a single campaign since 2019-20. He's got three goals and three assists in his last three games. He's got a real terrific sort of spell in attacking returns, including two assists and a goal in that second leg against Atletico. We actually weighed his full price on the sports book to assist in this game. But I've mentioned I'm expecting goals for both teams. So I really wanted to get him on side just to see if he can carry on this kind of surprising narrative. I've seen as big as 7-1 out there for him to assist. Now, you're going to get a big price because he doesn't create that many chances, as I've
Yeah.
mentioned. So I think that could be a nice side bet. And just based off what I said on PSG and Real Madrid prior, Kev, it's 6-1 almost for the double for both those teams to win these away legs. Now, it is a lot to ask away from home, but you ain't getting those prices on those two teams very often to just win games of football. So I think that's worth a bet.
Well, we know that injury time goals can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet. Now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. In the Europa League semi-finals, we've got Roma against Leverkusen in a repeat of last season's semi-final. Different scenario now with Daniele De Rossi in charge of Roma, a lot more attack-minded than Mourinho would have been. Stinch Leverkusen have been seconds from defeat in their last two Bundesliga matches, but have found a way to grab late equalisers. I thought actually against Stuttgart at the weekend, I tipped them to not. I laid them at the weekend in my Bet of the Day column because I felt. No Xhaka for the first time in the league. We wondered how that would affect them. And I think it did. And Stuttgart are a very, very good team. But they just have this remarkable ability to drag equalizers out of nowhere. And they still haven't lost a game in any competition this season.
Yeah, it's almost remarkable that they're at this stage of the Europa League when you consider they were minutes away from going out against Karabag until Patrick Schick stepped up. So I've said it all season that they're just relentless every single game. And I think it's standing them in really good stead because I think you'd see some teams maybe at this level rotate, rest players ready with one eye on the next game. But I think they're just maintaining their momentum. And it's standing them in a fantastic position to not only go unbeaten but pick up a treble. Like nobody really seems to be talking about Leverkusen doing a treble. They've got a relatively easy DFB Pokal final.
Yeah, should win the cup final, really. I mean, Kaiserslautern are fighting against relegation in the second tier, so they should win that.
To be honest, I think that's a really good matchup for them stylistically because Kaiserslautern are quite attacking. So I think they'll leave lots of gaps for Leverkusen to exploit. But it should be a good one to watch anyway. But yeah, Leverkusen are odds on to win the Europa League. They're 1.89, Atalanta 4.1, Roma 6.2, and Marseille outsiders at 10.5. And it's a similar price for Leverkusen to win this game. They're going off slight odds on away at Rome in the first leg. But as you say, it's not the Roma under Mourinho. I don't think we'll see similar to what we saw in the semi-finals last year. 0-0 and 1-0 across the two games. Sort of Alonso sort of struggled to break down the this very resolute Roma team, but it's clearly completely different. I think you can throw those games out the window completely now under De Rossi, considering since he's arrived, they've scored the second most goals in Serie A, whilst they've conceded over a goal a game. So completely different from Mourinho. Roma are one of 12 of 20 in league and Europe. Some sort of impressive scalps, I would say, beating Lazio. They were big outsiders to progress against Milan. They gave Inter a little bit of a run for their money as well. So I think given this volatility with Roma at both ends of the pitch, I don't think I'd want to back Leverkusen at odds on here. Tammy Abraham back and scoring goals as well. So you have to throw that in with Lukaku. Dybala, really pleased to see sort of Pellegrini sort of have the shackles released, and now he's able to get a bit more forward under De Rossi compared to Mourinho. So I want to get with goals because I think there's a little bit of a sort of old Roma being priced up in this match, a bit similar to how Palace were sort of priced up after Hodgson left and Glasner took over. It's like, oh well, it's they haven't been able to score goals very often or create chances all season, so we'll just keep pricing them a similar style, when I think you have to sort of rewrite the script if you like. So we can get over 2.25 goals here at 1.8. So not the 2.5 line, and I think that's sort of where the game should be at. So as long as we don't see 0-1 goals, we won't lose all our stake. If we see two goals, we'll lose half our stake. But I think it's a positive bet. As I say, this Leverkusen team is relentless. If the game's 1-1, I wouldn't put it past them to keep pushing to get a second to take to Germany in the second leg. And De Rossi's now been in charge for 20 games. They've won 12 of them, Roma, so quite admirable. 13 of those have gone over 2.5 goals, and again, we're talking about a line of 2.25. And I think I've spoken about this before, but just quickly, like when you see managers that played in a certain position take over teams, I think in my mind there is generally a correlation. We see like Gareth Southgate was a defender. England aren't that proactive. Gattuso was a defensive midfielder. His teams aren't generally that easy on the eye. So when I saw that De Rossi was taking over, I already had in my mind, okay, I think it'll be similar to Mourinho, but probably not as extreme defensively. But actually, you look at his Spal team, and they had a huge issue with defending, and eventually he was sacked. They only kept 7 clean sheets in the 26 games before he was sacked. So I think actually this De Rossi, maybe it's a bit to do with obviously ex-Roma as well. Maybe he wants to see the team do well, so he wants to
Oh,
be a
it's
bit
deliberate.
more
It's absolutely
expansive.
political as well. I think he realized what's the way to do this? The way to do this is to move away from everything that Mourinho was doing, because I think that would strengthen his position. That would get the fans on side. Because you've got to remember as well, a lot of the fans were devastated that Mourinho got sacked. They were really, really upset that he went, because he's the guy that delivered the Conference League. He's the guy that got them to the Europa League final last season. They were devastated that he went. So bringing in De Rossi was really smart by the Friedkins, I think. But also he recognised that if he delivered really good football, or at least very, really attacking football, that would get even more fans on side. And I think it's worked, and he's kind of stuck with it, and it's played into kind of the strengths of some of the good attacking players he's got.
Yep. So I think the way to go is to take the overs given the line. I think Leverkusen are capable of scoring a couple here and maybe even covering the line themselves as well. 11 of Leverkusen's last 17 gone over 2.5. So you think maybe there might be a bit of a let up, given that they've wrapped up the title. But as I said, this key word for Leverkusen under Xabi Alonso is relentless, and I think we'll see something similar in this match as well.
Well, we'll come back to the Europa League, but let's move on to the Europa Conference League, because we're going to talk about Aston Villa's clash with Olympiacos. Villa, the 1.43 favourites here against a side that's still in the mix in Greece to potentially win the title, but they're outsiders because they do have teams above them. But Jake, they knocked out Fenerbahce, and I don't think many of us necessarily saw that coming. Fenerbahce have been right up there in Turkey this season, have lots of quality players, so that was quite an eye-catching result.
Yeah, it was a huge scalp. Fenerbahce have been absolutely flying. Let's not forget what they did the previous round as well. They lost their home leg 4-1 against Maccabi and somehow won 6-1 to qualify. So
Yeah.
yeah, they're a team that are definitely in the ascendancy after what, could be described as a slow start. I'm looking at this game. I think Villa will win. Villa are the better team. They have more quality. They're at home. The home form has been generally really good. Obviously, they played really well for a half against Chelsea, and then I don't know what happened in that second half. Chelsea just do what Chelsea do and, turn in an absolute dour performance and then decide they want to turn up for a bit of a game. So I'm taking that with a bit of a pinch of salt. But yeah, Villa price to win, like you said, is quite sure, 1.43. But if we add both teams to score, we're getting 21 to 10 on the sports book. I think that's just too big of a jump. I mean, Villa to win and both teams to score has landed in 11 of their 23 league and Conference League matches this season. So it's got a 48% strike rate. So if you're offering 21 to 10, I thought this would be a little bit shorter than 2 to 1, to be honest, especially given that Olympiacos have scored plenty of goals recently. They've scored in all bar two of their 12 European matches this season. Obviously, started in the Europa League. Two of those came in, one of those came in the Europa League, and one of them came in the Conference League. But yeah, as we've seen with Villa all season, no problem creating chances. They're very good going forward. Bailey, Watkins, even Zaniolo, if he's coming off the bench. But the defensively, they remain suspect. And I think part of that is down to Boubacar Kamara being out. I think he was the kind of linchpin, if you like, that was holding things together a little bit, and they weren't conceding as many goals as what they are right now. I think him being out is a huge blow. It means that Douglas Luiz is playing a little bit deeper than he would perhaps like to. And I think that Olympiacos is going to be able to go Villa Park and create a couple of chances and keep this tie interesting heading back to Greece. So 21 to 10, Villa to win and both teams to score looks a good price to me. I was expecting shorter.
Yeah, boys, are you surprised that Villa have been able to manage the two competitions? Because if you look at Unai Emery's history, a lot of the time what he's tended to do is he's been brilliant in the Europa League. He obviously has won it four times now across his time with Sevilla and Villarreal. But what he would sometimes do is kind of junk the league so he could fully focus on the European stuff. But they don't seem to have had to do that so far, and they're still in pole position to get that fourth spot in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, it just only highlights the fantastic job that it's done. I mean, like you say, that not only are they still in the European competition, but to still be maintaining that fourth spot. And I know Tottenham have had a bit of a bad run and losing too many matches to sort of pile that pressure on. Manchester United,
Are
they haven't,
useless?
well, completely useless. If I'm not going to get a Leeds mentioning, can I at least get a Manchester United a shit mentioning?
Yes,
That's what I
there you
usually
go.
try and
There you
balance it
go.
out.
There you go.
Although, by the way, the reason I wore this Leeds shirt is because Champions League semi-finals, we were once in there, so I had to, I'm manifested in
Yes.
the future from the past.
Those glorious days.
To be honest,
Yes.
I think if I could have worn any shirt today, it'd have been a Coventry shirt. I don't think I've ever worn another shirt's team in my life, but considering Coventry, you need to beat Ipswich for Leeds tomorrow. I would have happily donned a Hadji Wright Coventry shirt if I could find one. But sorry, off I go on the tangent there,
Yes,
Kev,
there we
for you.
go.
Am I surprised at Villa? Yes, I'm surprised, but fair enough because yeah, they haven't. What I was trying to say was they haven't had loads of pressure on them for that top four over the last few weeks. Maybe that they thought they would. Maybe that's helped. Maybe it would have been a lot tougher if Tottenham were really breathing down their necks. Yes, they've still got the games in hand, but right in pole position to finish fourth and now odds on to win the Conference League, which I think is fair enough looking at the sort of other teams in there. And I think they could potentially wrap this leg up at home. To be completely honest, I'm not going to have a bet in this one, but I just trust you, Unai Emery, and I trust Aston Villa at home. So don't mind Jake's bet at all. And I think it could be, I could see it being even like something like a 4-1, 5-1 in this first leg.
Yeah, Stinch, how do you see this one going? Because, as we've said, Olympiacos can be dangerous, but they haven't found the consistency they've needed domestically to really push AEK, PAOK, Panathinaikos.
Yeah, they've got some dangerous players going forward, Fortunus, Mussouras, Martins, but Daniel Podence has been coming up with some
Yeah.
key goals recently as well. But I feel like there is a bit of a disconnect between the attack and the defence. I definitely feel they're a lot more vulnerable defensively compared with previous seasons. I mean, I was a regular backer in previous seasons whenever Olympiakos, Panathinaikos, PAOK, AEK met. I was always looking at nil-nil basically. But nowadays, it's kind of gone out the window. I'd say arguably the Greek league has maybe evolved a little bit more to. Maybe, and it may be something to do with VAR as well, but that's kind of what we see across the world. To be honest, in VAR leagues, we do see an increase in goals. But yeah, if you look at Olympiakos particularly, you look at them in the league last season, they conceded 24 goals in 36, and that was not even with winning the league. This season, they've already conceded 32. It's 33% goals, more goals already. It's just five clean sheets in the last 22, and they came against Ferencváros twice, Aris, Volos, and OFI. So not any sort of leading lights in the division. And as we've sort of already touched on, really surprised that they're at this stage, considering they lost that first leg. They're heavy odds on when they lost that first leg at home to Maccabi Tel Aviv. And then they allowed a 3-0 lead against Fenerbahce to end up at penalties. So I really think Aston Villa can take advantage here in this first leg. We know Olympiakos away can be intimidating. So I think Emery will be aware of that. So I think it's take a lead minimum and arguably maybe even wrap the tie up at this stage as well. West Ham were 1.47 when Olympiakos went there in the group stages of the Europa League. So given a Villa are very similarly priced, I think backing Villa in some way is actually value. Villa were 1.81 when they hosted West Ham. So arguably Villa should be shorter. A lot shorter than the 1.43 that they are. So just going to back Villa -1 on the Asian handicap around about 1.8. If they win by a single goal, it'll be money back. If they win by more than one goal, the bet wins.
And finally, let's go back to that second Europa League semi-final. Marseille up against an Atalanta side that just dumped out the tournament favourites, Liverpool. Stinch, the Italians are quite an interesting team, right? Because they're pushing on three fronts. They're chasing a top five place in Serie A to try and make sure of a Champions League spot. They're into the final of the Coppa Italia, which I think was what Gasperini was chasing all the way along, actually. That was the one that he was talking about kind of every so often this season, that he felt they could really push for and really win. But I actually, you were saying about Leverkusen being, fairly short favourites to win the Europa League. I think Atalanta should be a bit closer.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think there's a conversation to be had, perhaps to back Atalanta outright. They're 4.1 compared to Leverkusen's 1.89. They're going off 17-10 away in Marseille in this first leg. It's interesting you mentioned Leverkusen because I feel like they're playing a bit similar to them in terms of their relentless nature, and they're in very good form at the moment. They stuttered a little bit. They lost against Inter. I think they might have lost against Bologna in a couple of games around each other, but they bounced back very impressively. I'm sure most people watch them. Obviously, beat Liverpool away, and then in the second leg, I think they played the game quite well because after conceding so early in the game, I think they might have maybe changed their style, maybe collapsed in on themselves. But they're actually really, really dangerous. They had a goal disallowed, and they probably actually created the better chances. And I think they limited Liverpool maybe to one shot in the second half or one shot on target or something
Yeah,
like
they were
that.
great. They were really good.
So they're in a really good spot now. You talk about teams maybe running out of steam or being on the beach, etc. at this stage of the season. I think Atalanta are in a really good position right now. But I think Marseille are dangerous themselves, especially going forward. The new manager, Jean-Louis Gasset, that took over on the 20th of February. For those that aren't aware, actually, maybe this Boise wanted to do a quiz question, so I'll do a quiz question. What was Jean-Louis Gasset's last game in charge before he took over at Marseille?
I know, but I'll let the other guys have a go first.
I'm the question writer, so I don't have an answer for this question.
Okay. He was,
I just don't have a clue.
I think it was for the Ivory Coast, and I think it was them losing 4-0 to Equatorial Guinea, and he got fired. His assistant, Emer Sfai, took over and won the bloody thing, and then Gasset's ended up at Marseille and is actually doing quite well.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. I don't know if he was fired. I think he might have fired himself in a way. I think I'm not sure if he, but
Well,
either
he
way,
left. He definitely left,
and they went
whether
on
he
and
was
won the
pushed or he
competition.
jumped. Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see the history books and someone show me a team that loses 4-0 in a knockout competition and then goes on to win the thing. Like, I don't know if that's happened before. And you know, he is quite old as well. So I did think it's a very strange appointment. And
70, isn't he, Gasset? I
yeah,
think it's 70, yeah.
I've labelled it a roller coaster ride so far. He won his first five games in charge for Marseille, then he lost the next five. They've been really goal heavy, 48 goals in the 14 games. It's nearly 3.5 per game. 10 of the 14 have gone over 2.5. So, considering everything we know about Atalanta and 20 of Atalanta's last 30 have gone over 2.5, I'm quite happy to back over 2.5 goals at 5-6, as it's basically chalked up as a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, Aubameyang's in great form as well, so that always helps. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. We've got the normal weekend previews coming up later in the week, so keep an eye out for those. Remember, all of our shows are on Betfair's YouTube channel for non-racing content, but make sure you like and subscribe. That makes a real difference to your access to those, so make sure you do that. And of course, lots of good preview content this week when it comes to Europe. European and domestic football on our website, betting.betfair.com. From Stinch, from Jake, from Big Bad Boise, and from me, it's goodbye for now.